For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson with the latest readout video from our free Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter, to which again I say please subscribe and contribute what you can. Everything helps, and so many people who have, we're very grateful. I also have Kiitos to Finland, where viewers have made it number 14 on our list of all-time views by jurisdiction, which is also, we note, close to its ranking in per capita energy consumption, at which it's 20th in the world. Why? Because it's a wealthy country that can afford energy, and because it's cold. And cold is way more dangerous than heat to human beings and to other stuff that's alive and wants to stay that way. A condition which, in our case, is at least slightly diminished by the flood of Canadian government press releases that for our sins we at CDN are condemned to receive. There is much to dislike about them generally, from their windy verbiage to their fiscal incontinence. But in the climate context, one of the things that flies out at us is the incredible number of them that very obviously involve jet travel to take part in meetings that have no purpose. Now, we tend to view that meetings are, for the most part, a substitute for activity, not a form of it. But what's surely astounding is how hard it is to reconcile the insistence of those in the political class, like those in the celebrity class, that carbon is a menace to the planet, with the triviality of the causes that lead them to fly across continents and oceans again and again and again. When it comes to those governing Canada, or struggling to do so, things like, quote, Canada strengthens international cooperation during Secretary of State Sarai's participation at Doha Forum, end quote. Not that having whoever that is stay home would necessarily have led to anything productive either. And then there's the way that our politicians invite other politicians to leap onto an airplane and cross an ocean to babble inanities, as when, quote, the Honourable Maninder Sidhu, Minister of International Trade, met with Peter Burke, Ireland's Minister for Enterprise, Tourism and Employment, end quote, met him in Ottawa, instead of telling him, look, just stay home and Google business opportunities in Canada. It's especially frivolous since they basically meet the same people over and over again, a very ideologically homogenous global political elite. So what did they could possibly say to one another the 14th time they've met in the last 2 years could justify even the financial cost of the flight, let alone the climate cost, which is vividly present to their tongues on most other occasions? And here's a reductio ad absurdum. How can Canada's longtime climate activist Prime Minister justify taking a flight to watch not even a soccer game, but the drawing of lots in Washington for matchups in a soccer tournament next year? You know, we might start to believe in the climate crisis when the people who keep lecturing us about it start to act as if they believed in it. It burns us up. Unlike wildfires, whose increase is one of the most popular climate alarmist gotchas today, even though it hasn't, happened. Though a key bit of scorched earth for them is the Pacific Palisades and surrounding parts of Los Angeles that got burned to a crisp in January 2025. The inept response of the authorities to that fire, including the empty reservoir, had already drawn much critical attention, including from us. But now, as PJ Media reports, documents filed in a civil lawsuit against the state of California show that an order had been given by that state mere weeks before the Palisades fire that, quote, directed a let-it-burn fire management plan, end quote, meaning don't put out the fire, even if people lived there. What's more, they put this plan in place without telling the people who were going to be affected. And here you blamed our carbon. And now, a word from our sponsor, which, as always, is you. And I've mentioned before, I feel a bit awkward asking for money. I figure people don't like being asked. We understand that many of you are giving what you can, and we get letters from people saying, gee, I wish I could do more, but I'm on a fixed income, I've got a family to feed. So again, we're so grateful to everybody who gives, whether it's $2 a month or one time $50, one time £75. But we are up against very well-funded, government-funded climate alarmists. So if you value our work, and you haven't already made a contribution, please do become a sponsor. $2 a month, $10 a month, $20 a month, whatever you can afford, so that we can get back to doing what we love best, which is this. In the newsletter, we also note again that with the climate craze fading out fast, here comes plastic. Right on cue, Bloomberg Green has a new crusade. Quote, despite clear evidence that plastic is clogging oceans and beaches and breaking down into microplastics that enter our bodies, humans are continuing to produce the material at accelerating rates. The result? Global plastic pollution will hit 280 million metric tons per year by 2040, or a dump truck's worth every second. That is one of the alarming statistics from Breaking the Plastic Wave 2025, a report by the Pew Charitable Trusts with ICF International. It offers a comprehensive assessment of plastic pollution and its effect on human health and the environment, end quote. So, never mind net zero for carbon. Quote, if the world continues on in the current trajectory, the outlook for 2040 is bleak, the report warns, end quote. Cool. Whole new crisis? Same old remedy. Quote, at the root of the problem is the fact that plastics are mostly derived from fossil fuels, end quote. Boo, fossil fuels. And another thing. In the National Post on December 2nd, Niels Waldhaus, who's president of Canada's free market Fraser Institute, writes of this infamous memorandum of whatever between the federal and Alberta provincial governments that, quote, giving this seemingly great news, I eagerly read the six-page memorandum of understanding. Then I read it several more times. Each time my enthusiasm and understanding diminished rapidly. By the fourth reading, the only objective conclusion I could reach was not that a pipeline would finally be built, but rather that only governments could write an MOU that no Canadian could understand, end quote. And his comment raises a disquieting possibility, namely that the pundits punditing about it had not, in fact, read it, and certainly couldn't pass a quiz on its contents. But they still insisted on treating it seriously, and people still insisted on treating them seriously. We know not why. Then in the newsletter we cry, et tu, Boston? Because The Guardian misinforms us that, quote, New England warming faster than most places on Earth, study finds. Pace of area's temperature rise outpaced in U.S. only by Alaskan Arctic, apparently increased in past 5 years, end quote. It adds that, quote, the U.S. region called New England is widely known for its colonial history, maple syrup, and frigid snowbound winters. Many of these norms are in the process of being upended, however, by a rapidly altering climate, with new research finding the area is heating up faster than almost anywhere else on Earth, end quote. Without apparently realizing that New England was colder centuries ago because of the Little Ice Age, and then it warmed naturally long before CO2 was pollution. But in any case, we do want to let New Englanders know that if their region is warming faster than most of the planet, they shouldn't worry because they have lots of company, since nearly everywhere else is doing it too. Meanwhile, Climate Home News tries to excite us with, quote, of course we'll be back for COP31 in Turkey next year and at the Bonn Climate Change Conference in June, end quote, without drawing the obvious conclusion that, of course you will. And at COP32, and COP33, and COP314, and the intercalary pre-futility futile gatherings, because nothing's been achieved at the previous 30 COPs and all the intervening conferences where the same people say the same stuff to one another. Then they pile on the fun with, quote, but there's so much to look forward to before that, end quote, without drawing the obvious conclusion that COP31 in Turkey was not something anyone would look forward to except for possible comedy. And now this one's even more awkward than trying to pronounce Turkey's new name with its umlaut. Britain's Daily Telegraph headline hollers, quote, MOD tells staff not to discuss secrets in cars amid China spying fears, end quote. The issue with China spying is presumably clear to all, except those babes in the woods so naive they consider the PRC a strategic partner, which, unfortunately, includes Canada's foreign minister. But why cars? Well, so many EVs are Chinese and might have embedded spy hardware that the Telegraph story adds, along with images of warning stickers allegedly affixed to such cars, quote, the MOD has already banned some electric vehicles with Chinese components from being parked near sensitive military bases, end quote. So, of course, recognizing the danger, at least a bunch of them, so as to do astonishing harm to the economy, the environment, and their national security. Then, in a stunning development, we inform you that the New York Times has reported that a key paper predicting a titanic cost of climate change by 2049, an alleged $38 trillion a year, has been retracted because it was too flawed for mere correction. And this one is stunning because that paper was published barely 18 months ago, on April 17, 2024, in Nature, High Priests of Climate Change and Peer Review alike. And in its brief meteoric career, it was the second most cited paper in the press, and it was swallowed whole by once prestigious outfits from the US Congressional Budget Office and the UK Office for Budget Responsibility to the World Bank and the OECD. And it's also stunning because the Times reported it. So, will people change their views just because their facts were wrong? that it'd be not. The Times headline was, quote, top journal retracts study predicting catastrophic climate toll, end quote. But the subhead immediately insisted that, though false, it remained true. Quote, while growing evidence shows that carbon emissions are harming the economy, the journal Nature found that an outlier paper had deep flaws, end quote. Oh, a mere outlier. Albeit one that the Times concedes, quote, grabbed headlines and citations around the world and was incorporated in risk management scenarios used by central banks. On Wednesday, Nature retracted it, adding to the debate on the extent of climate change's toll on society, end quote. How about subtracting from the debate, since it removed a ludicrous figure that you all leapt at and then leapt about, hollering about? Oh, and speaking of being wrong, as the whole climate scare seems to be unraveling, Heatmap frets that, quote, the New York Times reported this weekend, for instance, that the online real estate marketplace Zillow has removed climate risk scores from more than 1 million home sale listings following complaints from real estate agents, end quote. It then quoted a scholar, known to think that climate change is causing huge damage to homes today, that, quote, they're doing people a disservice, end quote. Whereupon Heatmap went conspiratorial with, quote, the private sector has its own reasons not to be completely fulsome with climate-related risk data, end quote, without apparently first checking the meaning of fulsome. Or an economics text, because the private sector lives or dies by the accuracy of its risk assessment, unlike governments or activists. In the newsletter, we then continued our deep dive into this summer's U.S. Department of Energy Red Team Climate Report, looking now at Chapter 3.2 on emission scenarios and the carbon cycle. Now, CDN readers and viewers know all about the RCP 8.5 scam, where the IPCC runs impossibly exaggerated emission scenarios through their too-hot models and then generates headline-grabbing predictions of climate catastrophe. But the DOE team shows that the IPCC has been at this game for a long time. Almost as if they liked the result, much more than they liked real science. Speaking of which, Roger Pilkey Jr. marks the end of the 2025 hurricane season with a write-up and review. And as we so often say, if it had been a busy season, the climate crowd would have blamed greenhouse gases, but they brush off a quiet one as just weather, as if they cared more about the conclusion than they did about the evidence. But unfortunately, this time the trouble goes deeper for them. Climate modelers don't mind there being fewer hurricanes in a warming world, provided they're more devastating. So, the energy per hurricane should be trending up, even if the number of hurricanes is trending down. Yeah, coulda, shoulda, woulda. But guess what? Didn't. Instead, RPJ plots the global ACE, that's Accumulated Cyclone Energy Index, divided by the annual global hurricane count since 1980, and it looks like this. It's going down too. Stupid hurricanes. Finally, and it was in the run-up to Christmas, we went boldly into the CO2science.org archive, as well as the snowy woods, to cut down a Christmas tree, or to the store to buy one. And for many appealing choices, we bypassed balsam fir, or Abies balsamea, for its taller European cousin, Abies alba miller, or silver fir, which has no apparent downside. It's hardy, it's attractive, and it produces sugar that appeals to pollinators. And from 2000 to 2005, five experiments showed its seedlings grew an extra 33.2%, given an extra 300 parts per million of CO2. So next year, bring some Christmas cheer to a silver fir near you, and emit a little extra CO2 while out gift shopping. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson. Lines of pain etched into my face from government press releases.